time travel, wormholes. But no one gave them much thought, because scientists felt they could not be realized in nature. The consensus was that these solutions had no basis in the real world. You would die if you tried to reach a parallel universe via a black hole. The universe did not spin, and you cannot make infinite cylinders, making time travel an academic question. Thorn Time Machine. The issue of time travel lay dormant for 35 years until 1985, when the astronomer Carl Sagan was writing his novel Contact and wanted to incorporate a way in which the heroine could travel to the star Vega. This would require a two-way journey, one in which the heroine would travel to Vega and then return to Earth, something that would not be allowed by black hole-type wormholes. He turned to the physicist Kip Thorne for advice. Thorne shocked the physics world by finding new solutions to Einstein's equations that allowed for time travel without many of the previous problems. In 1988, with colleagues Michael Morris and Ulvi Yurtsever, Thorne showed that it was possible to build a time machine if one could somehow obtain strange forms of matter and energy, such as exotic negative matter and negative energy. Physicists were at first skeptical of this new solution, since no one had ever seen this exotic matter before, and negative energy only exists in minute quantities. But it represented a breakthrough in our understanding of time travel. The great advantage of negative matter and negative energy is that they make a wormhole transversible, so you can make a two-way trip through it without having to worry about event horizons. In fact, Thorne's group found that a trip through such a time machine might be quite mild compared to the stress found on a commercial airline. One problem, however, is that exotic matter, or negative matter, is quite extraordinary in its properties. Unlike antimatter, which is known to exist and most likely falls to the ground under Earth's gravitational field, negative matter falls up, so it will float upward in Earth's gravity because it possesses anti-gravity. It is repelled, not attracted, by ordinary matter and by other negative matter. This means that it is also quite difficult to find in nature, if it exists at all. When Earth was first formed 4.5 billion years ago, any negative matter on Earth would have floated away into deep space. So negative matter might possibly be floating in space, far away from any planets. Negative matter will probably never strike a passing star or planet, since it is repelled by ordinary matter. While negative matter has never been seen, and quite possibly does not exist, negative energy is physically possible, but extremely rare. In 1933, Henrik Casimir showed that two uncharged parallel metal plates can create negative energy. Normally, one would expect that two plates would remain stationary because they are uncharged. However, Casimir showed that there is a very small attractive force between these two uncharged parallel plates. In 1948, this tiny force was actually measured, showing that negative energy was a real possibility. The Casimir effect exploits a rather bizarre feature of the vacuum. According to the quantum theory, empty space is teeming with virtual particles which dance in and out of nothingness. This violation of the conservation of energy is possible because of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, which allows for violations of cherished classical laws as long as they occur very briefly. For example, an electron and anti-electron, due to uncertainty, have a certain small probability of being created out of nothing and then annihilating each other. Because the parallel plates are very close to each other, these virtual particles cannot easily come between the two plates. Thus, because there are more virtual particles surrounding the plates than there are between them, this creates an inward force from the outside that pushes the parallel plates together slightly. This effect was precisely measured in 1996 by Stephen Lamoureux at the Los Alamos National Laboratory. The attractive force he measured was tiny, equal to the weight of 1/30,000th of an insect, like an ant. The smaller the separation of the plates, the greater the force of attraction. So here is how the time machine Thorne dreamed up might operate. An advanced civilization would start with two parallel plates, separated by an extremely small gap. These parallel plates would then be reshaped into a sphere, so the sphere consists of an inner and outer shell. Then they would make two such spheres and somehow string a wormhole between them, so a tunnel in space connects both spheres. Each sphere now encloses a mouth of the wormhole. Normally, time beats in synchronization for both spheres. But if we now put one sphere into a rocket ship that is sent speeding near the speed of light, time slows down for that rocket ship so that the two spheres are no longer synchronized in time. The clock on the rocket ship beats much slower than the clock on Earth. Then if one jumps into the sphere on Earth, one may be sucked through the wormhole connecting them and wind up in the other rocket ship sometime in the past. This time machine, however, cannot take you back before the creation of the machine itself. Problems with negative energy. Although Thorne's solution was quite sensational when announced, there were severe obstacles to its actual creation, even for an advanced civilization. First, one must obtain large quantities of negative energy, which is quite rare. This type of wormhole depends on a huge amount of negative energy to keep the wormhole's mouth open. If one creates negative energy via the Casimir effect, which is quite small, then the size of the wormhole would have to be much smaller than an atom, making travel through the wormhole impractical. There are other sources of negative energy besides the Casimir effect, but all of them are quite difficult to manipulate. For example, physicists Paul Davies and Stephen Fulling have shown that a rapidly moving mirror can be shown to create negative energy, which accumulates in front of the mirror as it moves. Unfortunately, one has to move the mirror at near light speed in order to obtain negative energy, and like the Casimir effect, the negative energy created is small. Another way to extract negative energy is to use high-powered laser beams. Within the energy states of the laser, there are squeezed states in which positive and negative energy coexist. However, this effect is also quite difficult to manipulate. A typical pulse of negative energy might last for 10 to the negative 15th power seconds, followed by a pulse of positive energy. Separating positive energy states from negative energy states is possible, although extremely difficult. I discuss this more in Chapter 11. Last, it turns out that a black hole also has negative energy near its event horizon. As shown by Jacob Bekenstein and Stephen Hawking, a black hole is not perfectly black because it slowly evaporates energy. This is because the uncertainty principle makes possible the tunneling of radiation past the enormous gravity of a black hole. But because an evaporating black hole loses energy, the event horizon gradually gets smaller with time. Usually, if positive matter, like a star, is thrown into a black hole, the event horizon expands. But if we throw negative matter into the black hole, its event horizon will contract. Thus, black hole evaporation creates negative energy near the event horizon. Some have advocated putting the mouth of the wormhole next to the event horizon in order to harvest negative energy. However, harvesting such negative energy would be extraordinarily difficult and dangerous, since you would have to be extremely close to the event horizon. Hawking has shown that, in general, negative energy is required to stabilize all wormhole solutions. The reasoning is quite simple. Usually, positive energy can create an opening of a wormhole that concentrates matter and energy. Thus, light rays converge as they enter the mouth of the wormhole. However, if these light rays emerge from the other side, then somewhere in the center of the wormhole, light rays should defocus. The only way this can happen is if negative energy is present. Furthermore, negative energy is repulsive, which is required to keep the wormhole from collapsing under gravity. So the key to building a time machine or wormhole may be to find sufficient amounts of negative energy to keep the mouth open and stable. A number of physicists have shown that, in the presence of large gravitational fields, negative energy fields are rather common. So perhaps one day, gravitational negative energy may be used to drive a time machine. Another obstacle facing such a time machine is, where do we find a wormhole? Thorne relied upon the fact that wormholes occur naturally in what is called the space-time foam. This goes back to a question asked by the Greek philosopher Zeno over 2,000 years ago. What is the smallest distance one can travel? Zeno once proved mathematically that it was impossible to cross a river. He first observed that the distance across a river can be subdivided into an infinite number of points. But since it took an infinite amount of time to move across an infinite number of points, it was therefore impossible to cross the river. Or, for that matter, it was impossible for anything to move at all. It would take another 2,000 years and the coming of calculus to finally resolve this puzzle. It can be shown that an infinite number of points can be crossed in a finite amount of time, making motion mathematically possible after all. John Wheeler of Princeton analyzed Einstein's equations to find the smallest distance. Wheeler found that at incredibly small distances, on the order of the Planck length, 10 to the negative 33rd power centimeters, Einstein's theory predicted that the curvature of space could be quite large. In other words, at the Planck length, space was not smooth at all, but had large curvature. That is, it was kinky and foamy. Space becomes lumpy and actually froths with tiny bubbles that dart in and out of the vacuum. Even empty space, at the tiniest distances, is constantly boiling with tiny bubbles of space-time, which are actually tiny wormholes and baby universes. Normally, virtual particles consist of electron and anti-electron pairs that pop into existence momentarily before annihilating each other. But at the Planck distance, tiny bubbles representing entire universes and wormholes may spring into existence only to vanish back into the vacuum. Our own universe may have started as one of these tiny bubbles floating in the space-time foam that suddenly inflated for reasons we don't understand. Since wormholes are found naturally in the foam, Thorne assumed that an advanced civilization could somehow pick wormholes out of the foam and then expand and stabilize them with negative energy. Although this would be a very difficult process, it is within the realm of the laws of physics. While Thorne's time machine seems theoretically possible, although exceedingly difficult to build from an engineering viewpoint, there is a third nagging question. Does time travel violate a fundamental law of physics? A Universe in Your Bedroom. In 1992, Stephen Hawking tried to resolve this question about time travel once and for all. Instinctively, he was against time travel. If journeys through time were as common as Sunday picnics, then we should see tourists from the future gawking at us and taking pictures. But physicists often quote from T.H. White's epic novel The Once and Future King, where a society of ants declares, "Everything not forbidden is compulsory. In other words, if there isn't a basic principle of physics forbidding time travel, then time travel is necessarily a physical possibility. The reason for this is the uncertainty principle. Unless something is forbidden, quantum effects and fluctuations will eventually make it possible, if we wait long enough. Thus, unless there is a law forbidding it, it will eventually occur. In response, Stephen Hawking proposed a chronology protection hypothesis that would prevent time travel and hence make history safe for historians. According to this hypothesis, time travel is not possible because it violates specific physical principles. Since wormhole solutions are extremely difficult to work with, Hawking began his argument by analyzing a simplified universe discovered by Charles Meisner of the University of Maryland, which had all the ingredients of time travel. Meisner space is an idealized space in which your bedroom, for example, becomes the entire universe. Let's say that every point on the left wall of your bedroom is identical to the corresponding point on the right wall. This means that if you walk toward the left wall, you will not get a bloody nose, but will instead walk through the wall and reappear from the right wall. This means that the left and right wall are joined in some sense, as in a cylinder. In addition, the points on the front wall are identical to the points on the back wall, and the points on the ceiling are identical to the points on the floor. Thus, if you walk in any direction, you pass right through your bedroom walls and return back again to your bedroom. You cannot escape. In other words, your bedroom truly is the entire universe. What is really bizarre is that if you look carefully at the left wall, you see that it is actually transparent, and there is a carbon copy of your bedroom on the other side of this wall. In fact, there is an exact clone of yourself standing in the other bedroom, although you can only see your backside, never your front side. If you look below or above, you also see carbon copies of yourself. In fact, there is an infinite sequence of yourselves standing in front, behind, below, and above you. Making contact with yourself is quite difficult. Every time you turn your head to catch a glimpse of the clones' faces, you find that they have also turned away, so you never see their faces. But if the bedroom is small enough, you might pass your hand through the wall and grab the shoulder of the clone in front of you. Then you might be shocked to find that the clone behind you has reached out and grabbed your shoulder as well. Also, you can reach out with your left and right hands, grabbing hold of the clones to your side until there is an infinite sequence of yourselves holding hands. In effect, you have reached completely around the universe to grab a hold of yourself. It is not advisable to harm your clones. If you take a gun and point it at the clone in front of you, you might reconsider pulling the trigger, because the clone behind you is pointing a gun at you as well. In Meisner's space, assume that the walls are collapsing around you. Now things become very interesting. Let's say the bedroom is being squeezed, with the right wall slowly coming toward you at 2 miles per hour. If you now walk through the left wall, you will return back from the moving right wall, but boosted by an additional 2 miles per hour, so you are now traveling at 4 miles per hour. In fact, each time you make a complete circuit into the left wall, you get an additional boost of 2 miles per hour emerging from the right wall. So you are now traveling at 6 miles per hour. After repeated trips around the universe, you travel 6, 8, 10 miles per hour until you gradually approach incredible velocities close to the speed of light. At a certain critical point, you are traveling so fast in this Meisner universe that you travel back in time. In fact, you can visit any previous point in space-time. Hawking analyzed this Meisner space carefully. He found that the left wall and right wall, mathematically speaking, are almost identical to the two mouths of a wormhole. In other words, your bedroom resembles a wormhole where the left wall and the right wall are the same, similar to the two mouths of a wormhole, which are also identical. Then he pointed out that this Meissner space was unstable, both classically and quantum mechanically. If you shine a flashlight at the left wall, for example, the light beam gains energy every time it emerges from the right wall. The light beam becomes blue-shifted, that is, it becomes more energetic, until it reaches infinite energy, which is impossible. Or the light beam becomes so energetic that it creates a monstrous gravitational field of its own, which collapses the bedroom wormhole. Thus, the wormhole collapses if you try to walk through it. Also, one can show that something called the energy-momentum tensor, which measures the energy and matter content of space, becomes infinite because radiation can pass an infinite number of times through the two walls. To Hawking, this was the coup de grace for time travel. Quantum radiation effects built up until they became infinite, creating a divergence, killing the time traveler, and closing the wormhole. Since Hawking's paper, the divergence question he raised has generated a lively discussion in the physics literature, with scientists taking both pro and con positions with regard to chronology protection. In fact, several physicists began to find loopholes in Hawking's proof by making suitable choices for wormholes by changing their size, length, and so on. They found that in some wormhole solutions, the energy-momentum tensor did, in fact, diverge, but in others, it was well-defined. Russian physicist Sergei Krasnikov examined this divergence question for different types of wormholes and concluded that there is not a grain of evidence to suggest that the time machine must be unstable. The tide has swung so far in the other direction against Hawking that Princeton physicist Li-Xin Li even proposed an anti-chronology protection conjecture. There is no law of physics preventing the appearance of closed, time-like curves. In 1998, Hawking was forced to make a retreat of sorts. He wrote, "The fact that the energy-momentum tensor fails to diverge, in certain cases, shows that the back reaction does not enforce chronology protection. This does not mean that time travel is possible, only that our understanding is still incomplete." Physicist Matthew Visser sees the failure of Hawking's conjecture is not as a vindication for time travel enthusiasts, but rather as an indication that resolving issues of chronology protection requires a fully developed theory of quantum gravity. Today, Hawking no longer says that time travel is absolutely impossible, only that it is highly unlikely and impractical. The odds are overwhelmingly against time travel, but one cannot rule it out entirely. If one can somehow harness large quantities of positive and negative energy and solve the stability problem, time travel may indeed be possible. And perhaps the reason we are not flooded by tourists from the future is that the earliest time they can go back to is when the time machine was created, and perhaps time machines haven't been created yet. Gott time machine. In 1991, J. Richard Gott III of Princeton proposed yet another solution to Einstein's equations which allowed for time travel. His approach was interesting because he started from an entirely fresh approach, abandoning spinning objects, wormholes, and negative energy entirely. Gott was born in Louisville, Kentucky in 1947. And he still speaks in a gentle southern accent that seems a bit exotic in the rarefied, rough-and-tumble world of theoretical physics. He got his start in science as a child when he joined an amateur astronomy club and enjoyed stargazing. While in high school, he won the prestigious Westinghouse Science Talent Search Contest and has been associated with that contest ever since, acting as chairman of the judges for many years. After graduating from Harvard in mathematics, he went to Princeton, where he still works. While doing research in cosmology, he became interested in cosmic strings, a relic of the Big Bang that is predicted by many theories. Cosmic strings may have a width thinner than an atomic nucleus, but their mass may be stellar, and they may extend for millions of light years in space. Gott first found a solution to Einstein's equations which allowed for cosmic strings. But then he noticed something unusual about these cosmic strings. If you take two cosmic strings and send them toward each other, then, just before they collide, it is possible to use this as a time machine. First, he found that if you made the round trip around the colliding cosmic strings, space was contracted, giving it strange properties. We know that if we move around a table, for example, and return to where we started, we have traveled 360 degrees. But when a rocket travels around the two cosmic strings as they pass each other, it actually travels through less than 360 degrees because space has shrunk. This has the topology of a cone. If we move completely around a cone, we also find that we travel less than 360 degrees. Thus, by going rapidly around both strings, you could actually exceed the speed of light, as seen by a distant observer, since the total distance was less than expected. This does not violate special relativity, however, because in your own frame of reference, your rocket never exceeds light speed. But this also means that if you travel around the colliding cosmic strings, you can take a trip to the past. Gott recalls, "When I found this solution, I was quite excited. The solution used only positive density matter, moving at speeds slower than the speed of light. By contrast, wormhole solutions require more exotic, negative energy, density material, stuff that weighs less than nothing." But the energy necessary for a time machine is enormous. To allow time travel to the past, cosmic strings with a mass per unit length of about 10 million billion tons per centimeter must each move in opposite directions at speeds of at least 99.999999996% of the speed of light. We have observed high-energy protons in the universe moving at least this fast, so such speeds are possible, he observes. Some critics have pointed out that cosmic strings are rare, if they exist at all, and colliding cosmic strings are even rarer. So Gott proposed the following. An advanced civilization may find a single cosmic string in outer space. Using gigantic spaceships and huge tools, they might reshape the string into a rectangular loop that is slightly bent, resembling the shape of a reclining chair. The loop, he hypothesized, might collapse under its own gravity, so that two straight pieces of the cosmic string might fly past each other near the speed of light, briefly creating a time machine. Nevertheless, Gott admits, a collapsing loop of string large enough to allow you to circle it once and go back in time a year would have to be more than half the mass energy of an entire galaxy. Time paradoxes. Traditionally, another reason physicists dismissed the idea of time travel was because of time paradoxes. For example, if you go back in time and kill your parents before you are born, then your birth is impossible. Hence, you could never go back in time to kill your parents to begin with. This is important because science is based on logically consistent ideas. A genuine time paradox would be enough to completely rule out time travel. These time paradoxes can be grouped into several categories. Grandfather paradox. In this paradox, you alter the past in a way that makes the present impossible. For example, by going back into the distant past to meet the dinosaurs, you accidentally step on a small furry mammal that is the original ancestor of humanity. By destroying your ancestor, you cannot logically exist. Information paradox. In this paradox, information comes from the future, which means that it may have no origin. For example, let's say a scientist creates a time machine and then goes back in time to give the secret of time travel to himself as a youth. The secret of time travel would have no origin, since the time machine the youthful scientist possesses was not created by him, but was handed to him by his older self. Bilker's paradox. In this kind of paradox, a person knows what the future will be and does something that makes the future impossible. For example, you make a time machine to take you to the future, and you see that you are destined to marry a woman named Jane. However, on a lark, you decide to marry Helen instead, thereby making your own future impossible. The sexual paradox. In this kind of paradox, you father yourself, which is a biological impossibility. In a tale written by the British philosopher Jonathan Harrison, the hero of the story not only fathers himself, but he also cannibalizes himself. In Robert Heinlein's classic tale, All You Zombies, the hero is simultaneously his mother, father, daughter, and son, that is, a family tree unto himself. Unraveling the sexual paradox is actually rather delicate, requiring knowledge of both time travel and the mechanics of DNA. In The End of Eternity, Isaac Asimov envisions a time police that is responsible for preventing these paradoxes. The Terminator movies hinge on an information paradox. A microchip recovered from a robot from the future is studied by scientists, who then create a race of robots that become conscious and take over the world. In other words, the design for these super robots was never created by an inventor. It simply came from a piece of debris left over from one of the robots of the future. In the movie Back to the Future, Michael J. Fox struggles to avoid a grandfather paradox when he goes back in time and meets his mother as a teenager, who promptly falls in love with him. But if she spurns the advances of Fox's future father, then his very existence is threatened. Scriptwriters willingly violate the laws of physics in making Hollywood blockbusters, but in the physics community, such paradoxes are taken very seriously. Any solution to these paradoxes must be compatible with relativity and the quantum theory. For example, to be compatible with relativity, the river of time simply cannot end. You cannot dam the river of time. Time, in general relativity, is represented by a smooth, continuous surface and cannot be torn or ripped. It may change topology, but it cannot simply stop. This means that if you kill your parents before you are born, you cannot simply disappear. This would violate the laws of physics. Currently, physicists are congregating around two possible solutions to these time paradoxes. First, Russian cosmologist Igor Novikov believes that we are forced to act in a way so that no paradoxes occur. His approach is called the self-consistency school. If the river of time smoothly bends back on itself and creates a whirlpool, he suggests that an invisible hand of some sort would intervene if we were to jump back into the past and were about to create a time paradox. But Novikov's approach presents problems with free will. If we go back in time and meet our parents before we are born, we might think that we have free will in our actions. Novikov believes that an undiscovered law of physics prevents any action that will change the future, such as killing your parents or preventing your birth. He notes, "We cannot send a time traveler back to the Garden of Eden to ask Eve not to pick the apple from the tree." What is this mysterious force that prevents us from altering the past and creating a paradox? Such a constraint on our free will is unusual and mysterious, but not completely without parallel, he writes. For example, it can be my will to walk on the ceiling without the aid of any special equipment. The law of gravity prevents me from doing this. I will fall down if I try, so my free will is restricted. But time paradoxes can occur when inanimate matter, with no free will at all, is cast into the past. Let's suppose that just before the historic battle between Alexander the Great and Darius III of Persia in 330 BC, you send machine guns back into time, giving instructions on how to use them. We would potentially change all subsequent European history, and might find ourselves speaking a version of the Persian language rather than a European language. In fact, even the tiniest disturbance into the past may cause unexpected paradoxes in the present. Chaos theory, for example, uses the metaphor of the butterfly effect. At critical times in the formation of Earth's weather, even the fluttering of the wings of a butterfly sends ripples that can tip the balance of forces and set off a powerful storm. Even the smallest inanimate objects sent back into the past will inevitably change the past in unpredictable ways, resulting in a time paradox. A second way to resolve the time paradox is if the river of time smoothly forks into two rivers or branches, forming two distinct universes. In other words, if you were to go back in time and shoot your parents before you were born, you would have killed people who are genetically the same as your parents in an alternate universe, one in which you will never be born. But your parents in your original universe will be unaffected. This second hypothesis is called the many worlds theory, the idea that all possible quantum worlds might exist. This eliminates the infinite divergences found by Hawking, since radiation does not repeatedly go through the wormhole, as in Meissner space. It only goes through once. Each time it passes through the wormhole, it enters a new universe. And this paradox goes to perhaps the deepest question in the quantum theory. How can a cat be dead and alive at the same time? To answer this question, physicists have been forced to entertain two outrageous solutions. Either there is a cosmic consciousness that watches over us all, or else there are an infinite number of quantum universes. Chapter 6. Parallel Quantum Universes. I think I can safely say that nobody understands quantum mechanics. Richard Feynman. Anyone who is not shocked by the quantum theory does not understand it. Niels Bohr. The infinite improbability drive is a wonderful new method of crossing vast interstellar distances in a mere nothingth of a second, without all that tedious mucking about in hyperspace. Douglas Adams. In The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the best-selling, irreverent, wacky science fiction novel by Douglas Adams, the hero stumbles upon a most ingenious method of traveling to the stars. Instead of using wormholes, hyperdrives, or dimensional portals to travel between galaxies, he conceives of harnessing the uncertainty principle to dart across the vastness of intergalactic space. If we can somehow control the probability of certain improbable events, then anything, including faster-than-light travel and even time travel, is possible. Reaching the distant stars in seconds is highly unlikely, but when one can control quantum probabilities at will, then even the impossible may become commonplace. The quantum theory is based on the idea that there is a probability that all possible events, no matter how fantastic or silly, might occur. This, in turn, lies at the heart of the inflationary universe theory. When the original Big Bang took place, there was a quantum transition to a new state in which the universe suddenly inflated by an enormous amount. Our entire universe, it appears, may have sprung out of a highly unlikely quantum leap. Although Adams wrote in jest, we physicists realize that if we could somehow control these probabilities, one could perform feats that would be indistinguishable from magic. But for the present time, altering the probabilities of events is far beyond our technology. I sometimes ask our PhD students at the university simpler questions, such as, calculate the probability that they will suddenly dissolve and rematerialize on the other side of a brick wall. According to the quantum theory, there is a small but calculable probability that this could take place. Or, for that matter, that we will dissolve in our living room and wind up on Mars. According to the quantum theory, one could in principle suddenly rematerialize on the red planet. Of course, the probability is so small that we would have to wait longer than the lifetime of the universe. As a result, in our everyday life, we can dismiss such improbable events. But at the subatomic level, such probabilities are crucial for the functioning of electronics, computers, and lasers. Electrons, in fact, regularly dematerialize and find themselves rematerialized on the other side of walls inside the components of your PC and CD. Modern civilization would collapse, in fact, if electrons were not allowed to be in two places at the same time. The molecules of our body would also collapse without this bizarre principle. Imagine two solar systems colliding in space, obeying Newton's laws of gravity. The colliding solar systems would collapse into a chaotic jumble of planets and asteroids. Similarly, if the atoms obeyed Newton's laws, they would disintegrate whenever they bumped into another atom. What keeps two atoms locked in a stable molecule is the fact that electrons can simultaneously be in so many places at the same time that they form an electron cloud which binds the atoms together. Thus, the reason why molecules are stable and the universe does not disintegrate is that electrons can be many places at the same time. But if electrons can exist in parallel states hovering between existence and non-existence, then why can't the universe? After all, at one point the universe was smaller than an electron. Once we introduce the possibility of applying the quantum principle to the universe, we are forced to consider parallel universes. It is exactly this possibility that is explored in Philip K. Dick's disturbing science fantasy tale, The Man in the High Castle. In the book, there is an alternate universe separated from ours because of a single pivotal event. In 1933, in that universe, world history is changed when an assassin's bullet kills President Roosevelt during his first year in office. Vice President Garner takes over and establishes an isolationist policy that weakens the United States militarily. Unprepared for the attack on Pearl Harbor and unable to recover from the destruction of the entire U.S. fleet, by 1947 the United States is forced to surrender to the Germans and the Japanese. The United States is eventually cut up into three pieces, with the German Reich controlling the East Coast, the Japanese controlling the West Coast, and an uneasy buffer, the Rocky Mountain states, in between. In this parallel universe, a mysterious individual writes a book called The Grasshopper Lies Heavy, based on a line in the Bible, which is banned by the Nazis. It talks about an alternate universe in which Roosevelt was not assassinated, and the United States and Britain defeated the Nazis. The mission of the heroine in the story is to see if there is any truth in an alternate universe in which democracy and freedom prevail rather than tyranny and racism. Twilight Zone. The world of The Man in the High Castle and our world are separated by only the tiniest of accidents, a single assassin's bullet. However, it is also possible that a parallel world may be separated from ours by the smallest possible event, a single quantum event, a cosmic ray impact. In one episode of the Twilight Zone television series, a man wakes up only to find that his wife does not recognize him. She screams at him to leave before she calls the police. When he wanders around town, he finds that his lifelong friends also fail to recognize him, as if he never existed.